Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. It was a record holiday season for the resort in nearly every sector, and the average daily lodge room rate climbed to almost $800 a night.
The reality is we've got to upgrade the bed base in order to keep breaking those records.
And while Aspen has taken measures to slow growth, Glenwood Springs is looking to speed it up by combining the positions of Community Development Director and Economic Development Director.
It's very hard to get any project done. There's fighting over how to use the limited land. There's NIMBYism. And Glenwood Springs has, in some ways, done a lot of hand-wringing.
In the Mid-Valley, it seems there's no stopping the development train.
New commercial buildings popping up in Willits, like mushrooms after a rainstorm. So, again, growth everywhere is driven to a large extent by what's happening up here in Aspen.
Finally, some community members are shaking their heads on a recent decision by a judge to sentence a repeat offender to probation.
That might be a good place for the woman who just received her sixth DUI, somewhere for her to go.
Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Roger Merold and Andy Stone, both columnists for the Aspen Times. Thank you for coming into the studio and Randy being on the phone from your offices at the Glenwood Post-Independent.
Good to be here.
There's been some headlines as of in the last couple of weeks, and then I had an interview with the president and CEO of the ski company, Mike Kaplan, and there was a central reservations report that came out saying that our occupancy during the holiday week between Christmas and New Year's was at 95%. 5 days in a row, which was unprecedented, and that the average daily room rate had been bumped up to $775 a night versus $609 last year. And that is something that people are very proud of here. And, you know, the ski company president was like, yeah, I mean, we had record numbers, more in the history of the ski company, never had that many people on the mountains at one time, over 20,000 on their peak day, which was the Thursday in between Christmas and New Year's.
So I think you're looking at the glass half full. I mean, the reality is we've got to upgrade the bed base in order to keep breaking those records. So I just like to throw that in there.
When somebody pointed out,
I'm sorry, when you say upgrade the bed base.
Well, because it's so shabby that we can only get $750
okay.
a night. I mean, so $775. So yeah. If we're ever going to reach $900 a night, we can't do it with what we have out there.
I think that's entirely reasonable.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, somebody who's in that sector said, you know, the reason that number is so high, it's actually skewed because the properties like residents at Little Nell go for $5,000 a night. So it makes that average daily rate go up. So not everything is $775. It might be like $500 or $400. But that's the debate is, you know, one of the debates that comes off of this is beyond the carrying capacity is that, you know, our inventory is starting to get dated. And while you joke about it, Roger, it is, you know, that's the issue for some of these lodges is that can some small lodge in Aspen get away with charging $400 a night if it's got 70s and 80s?
Well, it looks like there's plenty of incentive for those small lodges to upgrade. If they think they can upgrade and get $775 a night, it probably makes economic sense to do so. And if they're not upgrading, I don't know. I can't explain it other than to say that they're content with doing what they're doing.
And remember the prior 6 months, that was not the average. I think it was closer to a $400 room night.
Which is about what Snowmass was during the month of December.
And Snowmass still provides a good alternative. There are new rooms out there, and there are some pretty dated properties as well. But, I mean, it's not $775 across the board, I guess is the thing. But that said, I mean, maybe we're looking at suites or multifamily. You know, what I gleaned from Carolyn Zachariasen's interview with the president of SkiCo was that we have these return guests and we have these large families coming and they need more space. So that might contribute to that too.
But what it kind of comes down to is, after all, we are seeing, I mean, if you look at the world picture, the national picture, people talk about tremendous income inequality, the tiny fraction of 1% who have more money than the rest of the world put together. And we're the ski resort for that group, or we're one of the ski resorts for that group. So we are, you know, cherry picking the very wealthiest people in the world, and we're charging prices that match the people who are coming here. The only question is, Roger perhaps sarcastically was referring to, is whether they're getting their money's worth out of that. And that gets back to, you know, even wider questions about the entire experience here with, is it too crowded? People get stuck in traffic jams. We can go on forever on those issues as well. But those are all part of the same problem.
Yeah, and if you're 95%, so people, obviously, we have enough people that will pay that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I asked Mike Kaplan about that, you know, carrying capacity issue that we've talked about before on this show. And, you know, he would agree that 95% is, it feels pretty, it's too full. If we could, you know, have that week prior to that, which was like at 60%, he said it was a, you know, down from last year. How do we get people to come, you know, not all at once, it's feast or famine?
And the problem with that discussion is that it always seems we start with that discussion. We need to even out the peaks and the valleys. And then somehow it always winds up turning into permission to build more hotel rooms. We start by marketing and we wind up with building. And at least part of the reason would seem to be that there's a lot of money in developing real estate. And there's not a whole lot of money. There's millions for someone to walk away with by improving marketing for the off season. That's a whole different issue. So there isn't the incentive to really do that compared to the incentive to make many millions of dollars.
Well, and you just brought up an interesting point too. The argument seems to always start with this dated bed base that we have that needs to be upgraded, and the argument finishes with we need to build new hotels, new bigger hotels. So we're increasing the supply of hotel rooms. I don't exactly understand how that incentivizes the smaller hotels to upgrade from their 1970s decor. It just seems like that should drop prices and make it less likely that the smaller hotels will upgrade.
And it helps make the town even worse when we hit 95%, because now it's 95% of an even larger bed base.
Sure, and the small proprietors of those lodges, I mean, they can't just rely on 1 or 2 weeks. You know, there needs to be a more consistent stream of business. And I think that the ski company, it's on their shoulders to make that happen for the resort.
Well, and I think a lot of those small operators rely on, they bring the guests year round by offering lower prices. So I think that's their strategy. They're not exactly chasing that $900 per night room rate. They want to get people here in the off season. They want to get people here in the low months, in early and late summer and middle of winter. So I think they, by not upgrading and making it all 5-star accommodations, they can offer lower prices. And I think that's, you know, they're good business people. They know what they're doing. So I think they've got the formula that is kind of being overlooked in this discussion.
It's a question in my mind, is this issue of Aspen's identity as a ski town. It seems to me that is, Aspen as a ski town is what would bring people here in those lower times of the season. In other words, yeah, all the super elite who may or may not really love skiing all that much will come here for the peak season. But then when you get to the off weeks, you want people who are actually skiers who want to come here and ski. And Aspen needs to reinforce its identity as a place that people come to ski, not a super glitzy resort where people come to see and be seen.
Yeah.
Well, how about
train's already left the station.
Yeah. But how about advertising Aspen between Christmas and spring break? That's the best time to ski here,
mm-hmm.
Indisputably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the city of Aspen is about to end its year-long moratorium on development in the commercial core. And that was led by, it was a newly appointed community development director at the time. And Randy, the city of Glenwood Springs had a hard time filling the position of a community development director. And you had a story in your paper this week talking about how they're now going to mesh that position with an economic development director, because you're,
right.
So that's completely different way of doing things on your end of the valley.
Yeah, and I think they were having trouble finding the right person for the job. So in combining the two, they're hoping to make it more attractive and to bring in talent. Our new city manager, Deb Figueroa, has quite a background in community development and is getting really great reviews around town. But the point of this is, of course, that Glenwood Springs has some really great opportunities in front of it. There are good opportunities to grow here, even though we are a little bit geographically constrained.
Isn't there an inherent conflict of interest to have the economic development director be the community development director?
Sure, but they're both city positions. It's all for the same cause, I think, is how the city's looking at it.
Well, we might have a little slanted view up here in Aspen. There aren't too many places in the world that I can think of that have problems with too much growth.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. Most of the time I think the community development and the economic developer probably see pretty close eye to eye in a lot of places around the world.
But then how do you review that?
Well, I know. It does.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a little inherent conflict of interest there. And I know that the previous community development director in Aspen was always accused of being, you know, too pro-growth. And I could see how that could be an issue in Glenwood.
Yes.
Has that been brought up at all in any conversations that you've heard, Randy?
Sure. I mean, John Stroud asked about it when he was doing the story. And you've got the mayor just talking about there's very little that's economic development that wouldn't go through the community development department, is his view. I think that Glenwood Springs, one way to look at this is that it's very hard to get any project done. You know, there's fighting over how to use the limited land. There's NIMBYism, and Glenwood Springs has, in some ways, done a lot of hand-wringing for a lot of years on a lot of different projects. And now, with these opportunities, the attitude of city government is that we're not going to let this pass, that we are actually going to develop the confluence. We are actually going to seize the opportunity to dress up and extend the downtown to the north side of the river. And ultimately, the council has to make the decisions anyway. And there is a pro-development point of view on the council, and I think that's a good thing. I think that you need some updating, you need some commerce away from the traditional downtown to turn away from the traffic a little bit. I have a hard time seeing how that's going to deprive people of the amenities of living here when you can hike right up into BLM land at the end of 8th Street.
Well, so. I just wonder, I'm sorry, Randy, how the neighborhood concerns would be, rolled in there. There's a lot of population over there near the old plant, near the confluence. Right, I think there's some mobile home parks, and there are neighborhoods along Midland too.
There will be a big fight over what happens at the confluence. There's no question about that, and the city council is going to have to settle that fight. In my 2.5+ years in Glenwood Springs, I haven't heard residents being shut out. They're certainly heard, and I think the council's been, you know, quite responsive.
So again, it's a tale of two ends of the valley, and while there's a lot of development happening, and I think it's being welcomed in Glenwood, you know, we up in Aspen, the city council, you know, people are elected on a slow growth. That's what people want. Yet there was a headline in the Daily News on Tuesday saying that it was, of course, a record year in construction, the valuation of amount of building being happening is $384 million worth of construction. We can't stop the train.
It felt like a record year of construction, I think, for anyone who lived in the Upper Valley.
Yeah, I think so, too. Mm-hmm. It's sort of funny, you know, just living here a long time, I always have this sense that, okay, we're almost finished with Aspen. We're going to be finished after these new buildings are built, but it just keeps going and going and going.
It does.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's, you know, government initiated as well. You mm-hmm. know, there's a lot of big government projects happening. Yeah.
And there's always something old enough to tear down and start over again,
sure,
even if it was just built fairly recently.
Right.
Again, we're back to that same question where we started, which is this question of growth in Aspen. It is the overwhelming issue that affects everything that happens at this end of the valley.
Right.
Whether it's growth in tourist accommodations, growth in single-family homes, growth in construction, growth in the airport, growth everywhere you look. It's what Aspen's been wrestling with for, you know, I haven't been here as long as Roger, but for the...
You've been paying attention longer.
40-odd years I've been living here, it's been what everybody's been fighting over, and we'll continue to fight over until it's over.
But we haven't seen a commensurate population growth. We've seen a growth in other sectors.
Well, it's probably all in Randy's neck of the wood down in Glenwood.
Well, yeah,
exactly.
Right.
I mean, we've been driving people out of Aspen. I mean, Aspen has been, in a sense, creating a refugee crisis of its own, of people flooding the Down Valley communities.
You could probably measure our population growth in traffic numbers.
So. Yeah,
sure. And I mean, and that's what the communities that Randy covers are grappling with. While Glenwood is welcoming growth and hiring somebody to help with that effort, then there's, you know, and then you look at the Mid-Valley growth. And Randy, mm-hmm. you had a story about a new city market going in Carbondale. Like, that's a big deal for that little town.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. We now continue our conversation about growth in the Roaring Fork Valley with Aspen Times columnists Andy Stone and Roger Marolt, Madeline Osberger with the Aspen Daily News, and Randy Essex at the Glenwood Post-Independent.
Those of us who live in the greater El Jebel Metropolitan District, the growth there is continuing apace with hundreds of homes going in. So, and, you know, new commercial buildings popping up in Willits, like mushrooms after a rainstorm. So, again, growth everywhere is driven to a large extent by what's happening up here in Aspen.
Right.
It is, and it's, you know, as I've said many times on the show, it's why the bridge is getting built here, which opens up these development opportunities in Glenwood Springs. But, you know, certainly the largest infrastructure project in a generation on the Western Slope would not be getting done were it not for the need to move people to Snowmass and Aspen to work and play.
To which we say to you people down there, you're welcome.
I do think that, well, you know, come at 4:30 and watch the traffic come through town and we'll say thanks.
So it sounds a little bit like we're building a wall and making Glenwood pay for it.
I think that Up Valley interests certainly could have paid more for that bridge. But that aside, I think that's what's happening in the Mid-Valley between Willits and Carbondale is really interesting. That, you know, Willits is 8 miles from my house on Main Street in Carbondale, so there are going to be two City Market fuel stations within 10 miles of each other, along with a brand new city. Well, we had questions about whether the City Market in Carbondale is going to go ahead because food prices slipped last year and Kroger delayed a lot of its capital projects, including the Carbondale Market. So it is supposed to, it hasn't acquired the land yet. It's supposed to submit its plat to Carbondale in February. We called and asked after the El Jebel fuel station was announced, and they insist that they're going ahead. I think that strip between Willits and Carbondale, which is pretty flat and potentially developable, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if in 10 years that were a little bit like an exurban area.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. It'll look like driving to Vail from Eagle.
Again, we see those projects popping up already, and people are fighting over them already, and 100 houses here, a couple of 100 houses there. So it's creeping in both directions, up from Glenwood and down from El Jebel. So.
What do you guys think this valley will look like in 10 years? from Aspen to Glenwood? And do you see all those things being built?
Well, it's kind of funny. I remember it must have been 10 or 15 years ago, there was a study that was widely published locally about how Highway 82 would have a stoplight about every 2 miles, and it would begin to look like Colfax Avenue in Denver. And I thought that was such nonsense when I read it. But if you drive up and down the valley now and count those stoplights, there actually is one about every 2 miles from Glenwood to Aspen. So, you know, I think we're heading there. The will of Aspen is to not grow, but the
rest of it is.
The rest of the valley is.
And again, the will of Aspen may be to not grow, but the fact of Aspen is that it keeps growing.
Exactly. And forcing development down valley.
Just like Americans in general, the will is to lose weight, but we keep getting fatter.
What a great analogy.
I think that in the 2020s, Basalt El Jebel will be the population center of the valley. I think that Glenwood Springs will be nicer, but I do think that it's geographically constrained, geologically constrained, and that it will be easier to develop multifamily housing in the Basalt, El Jebel, and unincorporated county area at the Mid-Valley. And Willits is a, you know, not insignificant shopping center. And in some ways, I think it'll be indistinguishable, except for the canyon walls on either side, it'll be a little bit indistinguishable from any place in America. I mean, the kind of development that will happen and the kinds of stores and restaurants and so forth that will go in there will lose a little bit of the mountain character.
Yeah, I would say Willits has already done that. Yeah. It feels like a Denver suburb already.
But there's still great open areas between the Mid-Valley and Glenwood, too. And
do you think they'll be there 10 years from now?
Possibly. I mean, I would have thought 10 years ago, I maybe would have thought it would be more developed than it is. I mean, we had the Great Recession in the middle of there. But I think that there are still landowners who are interested in keeping those big swaths open.
And by the way, just harking to what Randy said, when we look at the Basalt, Willits, El Jebel area becoming one of the centers of the valley, if not the center of the valley, we should give a shout out to the town of Basalt, which seems to be able to continue to thrive on complete crisis and government collapse. I think we just heard that their interim city manager is now leaving before they want him to. So they've lost a city manager. Now they're losing an interim city manager. They don't have a new city manager. They don't seem to have any kind of grip on what's going on. And yet they are one of the most important population and growth centers in the valley.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure it out soon.
I wanted to respond to something Randy said about landlocked or geologically locked. I've always wondered why, because I've lived here over 30 years, and that mall has always been kind of the mall that time forgot. Why it hasn't been redeveloped, that whole area would be a great place for housing. I mean, it just does seem to be ripe for redevelopment, but has never, that's a lot of land over there.
You don't mean the big Park Meadows Mall, you mean the old mall.
The old mall, where the Kmart couldn't even make it.
Yeah.
The owner of the mall in West Glenwood fiercely holds on to it and maybe is a little bit stubborn about not wanting it to change.
You know, it's going to happen. I was in a store there not too long ago and over Christmas, and the roof was leaking. There were buckets all over the floor, and there were birds flying around inside the store. So,
Randy, you had a headline in your paper regarding a conversation that the Carbondale Town Trustees had about whether or not it should give resources to a drug task force called Trident that's in the valley, or spend it on mental health. Can you give us a quick summary of that?
Well, it's the ongoing struggle here of providing both mental health and addiction resources, and the Carbondale trustees being in Carbondale maybe are a little bit more sensitive to the humanity of it, but obviously a lot of the problems that we have to do with people who need substance abuse and or mental health treatment. And Carbondale's asking itself, we're paying $100,000 a year to be part of a drug task force. And one of the trustees just put it very sharply, are we fighting the failed drug war? Are we investing in a failed approach to these problems that are related to substance abuse and mental health issues, and would we be better off to invest in a counselor, maybe attached to the police department or attached to the city in some way who can help with that. And it's a discussion that they're going to renew at some point and should be interesting. You know, maybe there could be some shared resources, some shared public resources in the Valley. The discussion of creating a detox center that about a year ago was bubbling up again in Glenwood Springs, and there was a task force with representatives from hospitals and law enforcement and the county involved, fizzled out because of the cost of keeping it operating long term. So maybe you take something of a more mobile approach to this. It doesn't help with somebody who's acutely wasted and needs to just have a place to sober up. But if there's a resource to help that person the next day and the next week and the next month, maybe that's maybe that in the long term would save our towns a little bit of cost and pain.
Madeline, that might be a good place for the woman who just received her sixth DUI. somewhere for her to go
somewhere for her to be sent.
Well, to be sent, that's
probably
right.
Go to jail. If you have six DUIs, I'm not sure how she escaped jail time more than 90 days. She's on probation for 10 years. Yeah. And, you know, the next time she goes to jail will probably be when she hits another person and kills them.
Yeah, stringing this out seems to be a question of just waiting for something horrible to happen. I don't quite understand it.
You know, the conversation that happened among the Carbondale Town trustees is similar to what happened when the police chief went before the Aspen City Council months ago and said, I want to dedicate one of my officers to just being a mental health officer who's dealing with these people that are on the street who have slipped through the cracks in the gap of services that we have, whether it's a substance abuse problem, whether it's a depression or suicide issue, whether it's just mental illness in general. And so they're putting a dedicated cop who's been trained to deal with this on the streets. And they've put, you know, it's $100,000 a year toward it. So it's the same issues that are, I think, every agency a lot throughout the Valley are dealing with. And so I see more resources and conversations happening toward that. The point is how do you get that woman to not have even the first DUI?
Well, that's right. It comes down, I mean, the issue is kind of mental health and drugs and alcohol addiction are a little bit related. I mean, do you fight the battle on the front end before people are addicted, or do you fight it at the back end when you're trying to help them with their addiction? So that's a really hard question to solve, especially on the front end. I don't know how you do it.
Right.
I mean, like we talk about the failed drug war, but what's the alternative on the front end? Education, I suppose. But that's a difficult task, too.
Well, thank you for taking the time and coming into the studio.
A pleasure.
Thanks
to be
for
here.
Having us.
That was Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times. Andy Stone, also a columnist. Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor for the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zacharias, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.